if they caught that deep sigh there when we turned the microphone. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl.
And I'm Molly Wood, and welcome to Make Me Smart, home of the deep sigh.
Deep
the Kai sigh.
So every week we dive into the big issues in tech, as you know, also the economy and culture, and we are joined by all of you because, say it with me now, none of us is as smart as all of us.
All like deep sigh topics, I'm not going to lie. Deep
well,
sigh
yeah, no,
topics.
You know what? I'm not surprised. Not surprised.
Actually, this week, I think this is going to be a little bit more fun. We're going to talk about our terrifying, all-encompassing surveillance economy.
Deep sigh topics are not fun.
Those are not fun. Sometimes we go to the dark place.
Yes.
We're not going to lie. This week, we're not going to totally do that. I mean, we are going to raise the specter of a smart home that could lock you in and spy on you and kill you, but in like a slightly happier way.
What even was that?
We're going to talk about smart homes.
What even was that?
I watched too much sci-fi, you guys. A couple of months back, listener Jordan Perry from Denver, Colorado, sent us, you may recall, this interesting question, which we are going to replay here for all of you because it launched 1,000 further conversations. The upshot is that her landlord told her complex, without much notice, that her apartment was going to be upgraded for her convenience to a smart apartment.
We are all getting keyless entry into our units, a digital thermostat, and a smart water sensor, as well as compatibility with other smart home services. This will all be managed via a third-party app on our phones, which, side note, is hosted on Amazon Web Services.
Yeah,
as someone with major concerns about my data privacy and my personal privacy, I would never choose to have a smart home for myself, and I'm concerned about the fact that this upgrade is happening basically without my consent. So my question for you guys is, as a tenant, what can and should I be demanding of my property managers relative to my data and personal privacy?
So what we did with that was we turned it into this episode of this podcast. Get a load of us. Because, look, there's a whole lot going on here, right? There's privacy. There's data in the home. There's being involved in that data in a receptive and accepting kind of way. It's just really interesting.
Yeah. And not for nothing, since that question was asked, Amazon made an announcement about putting Alexa, like a bunch of new Alexa devices, and then putting Alexa into every device from, you know, a car, which is true, to a microwave, which is also true. And then Facebook came along and announced the Facebook Portal, which I still maintain is like the creepiest name ever for a device that's going to live inside your house and be a portal into everything
okay,
you do with
Facebook,
a camera.
Facebook really respects your privacy, so everything's going to be fine.
They're really good at protecting it, too. Just ask them.
They care. Message, they care.
It has a camera in it, you guys. A camera. So it turned into a super relevant question. And not only do you ask us the good questions, you give us the good answers. Our expert this week
See what we
is a listener, because none of us is as smart as all of us. Listener David Wiltz is a tech consultant who does this for a living and works with developers on building smart buildings and smart homes, installing this kind of technology into condo complexes all around the world, in China and Santiago, Chile, the Middle East, Chicago, all over. And when he heard Jordan's question, he wrote us a really long answer. And then we were like, oof, TLDR, bro, get on the phone with us.
Oh, my God.
So we called him.
Oh, my God. Has there ever been a more Mollywood phrase ever than TLDR, bro? Oh, my God. And also, had I said that, I'd have gotten crucified. But anyway.
I know. So, I'm a little embarrassed, but I also want it on a T-shirt. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So anyway, so not only does he do this for a living, David Wiltz, but he has a smart home himself. So we sat down with him. We chit-chatted for a while. You're going to hear that in a minute. First, though, we had him go on a tour with a guy holding a microphone in front of his face because we weren't in Chicago. It's all integrated into his family and his life, including something called the bedtime button.
All right. So we're in the foyer of our house here, and my son Harry, when he was younger, was afraid of the dark, as every kid is, and how most adults are, too, if they would admit it. But Harry wouldn't want to go upstairs to get ready for bed and do bath if there were no lights on upstairs. And so what we did was put in a keypad at the bottom of the stairs, and the very bottom button is what we call the bedtime button. And when he hits that button, all of the lights on the second floor turn on. And this was a thing that enabled him to have some sense of independence.
I mean,
right?
Who doesn't want a bedtime button right now? I do. Let's see. David has automatic lights in the laundry room, temperatures scheduled with a smart thermostat for the freezing Chicago mornings, and or the hot ones, I guess, because that happens too. And another innovation specifically for his son, who is now 11 and maybe doesn't need the bedtime button so much. Although I have an 11-year-old. I'm not going to lie. We could use it.
Really?
But smart, because he went to the movies and it's stupid October. I hate October when every TV commercial and every preview in front of the movies is scary.
Well, of
course. It's all so scary.
Well,
anyway. That,
hence my never go see a scary movie. But that's a whole different thing about me. But
no,
anyway.
We didn't even go to a scary movie, just like a regular movie. But all the previews are scary because it's stupid October. Anyway.
Also,
I
hate Halloween. Have I told anybody that? That's a whole different
thing. I am mad about. You do?
Oh, I do. I hate Halloween.
Man. I went to Costco last night and I bought 4 bags. I could have a football team over for Halloween.
Well, of what? Of candy or of Halloween decoration?
Of candy.
Oh yeah, that's a different thing. Candy's fine, but
I have the skeleton crawling out of my yard. I've got the creepy lights and the space.
Hard pass. Aww. Hard pass. Anyway, back to David and the electronic home.
Yes, and the amazing system that he set up for his son, the smart technology that can help his kid with guitar practice.
We tell him he has to practice for a half an hour. And so he's always trying to ask us, am I done? Has it been a half an hour? And we realized we were getting on each other's nerves all the time when he had to practice. And so now he uses Alexa and an Amazon Dot. So he'll ask Alexa to start a timer for 30 minutes. And then the songs that he's practicing, like Alexa, play Should I Stay or Should I Go? And Alexa will play the song.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
And then he'll practice his guitar along with it. And it ends up being a great practicing tool because we get all of the different songs via the Amazon Prime membership. And if it's a song we don't have via Prime, we just buy the song, and then he can practice all of the songs he's playing with his band using the Amazon Dot.
Oh, that I had had an Amazon device when I was practicing the cello in fourth grade. But anyway, I would still not be playing the cello. That's all I'm saying.
That is pretty clever, though.
It is pretty clever. And the thing is that David, obviously, he loves devices and tech and all that jazz. But here's the thing. Since he does this professionally, he knows the risk, right? He knows the downside. So we sat down with him for a longer chat about security, privacy around technology in the home. And we started with, whether he worries about these devices keeping an eye on his family.
Oh, of course. And I think, though, more than myself thinking that, my wife thinks that, too. My wife regularly unplugs the Alexa as soon as my son finishes using it for guitar practice.
Well, so how does that go over, you being the digital home guy and her being the unplug the Alexa woman? How does that work?
It's a really great balance because, at least I think it is, because my family is, has been subjected to a lot of experiments over the years. And my wife is very different than I am. For instance, every morning she comes down and turns on WFMT, the local classic radio station. So I figured, why not have it turn on automatically at 7 a.m. on a weekday and 8 a.m. on a weekend?
And did you freak her out?
She knew it was coming. She knew it was coming. I told her I was going to do it. But she, at the end of the day, wanted to be in control of it instead of having it automatically happen. And I think it's great as long as people have a chance to opt in and opt out. And so we've done a lot of experiments to see, what's that balance between convenience and doing your normal routine.
I did an interview recently where I had somebody very nicely explain that when people worry about privacy with respect to smart homes, they're often worried about the wrong thing. Like, yes, there's data being collected on you. No, it's not happening if you're not talking directly to the device. Is that just a hard thing to convince people of?
Really, it doesn't take convincing. And one of the things that I work on is trying to create a new model that makes the old model obsolete. And everybody carries around a smartphone now, even though it's a recording device and a video recording device, and it knows exactly where you are at all times. But people want the convenience of that more than the risk of what privacy they may be giving up as a result. And with technology, I've found when people want that inconvenience to go away or want that new feature or new convenience to be a part of their lives, they do it. So, you know, I would say the rate of the adoption varies greatly by someone's age.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to roll out my mother as an example here. And it's been established that she doesn't listen to this podcast because she doesn't know what podcasts are. So I'm safe in saying this. She would rather be dead than have the lights turn on automatically when she gets up in the middle of the night to go pee. Honest to God, it would scare the hell out of her.
Well, what's interesting, though, is that I know a lot of old people, and I've worked in senior living where we do have the occupancy sensors in there. But instead of having the lights go bang all the way on when they get up to go to the bathroom at 2 in the morning, they go up to maybe 5% or 10%, just enough so they can see their way to the bathroom comfortably, but not enough for it to be a jarring experience. And it's those kinds of little things that really make all of this inviting.
Wait, so I want to back up a little bit because I feel like we sort of glossed over some of the things that you have enabled in your own home for convenience. And to be honest, I want to know how, because I feel like it's so nascent that only someone like you can figure out how to make all these things work together so well.
What are
some of the magical, like, tell us about the laundry lights and the bathroom, the bedtime button and the guitar practice. How are you making this all
work? Sure. So really one of the things we're seeing a change is that people want the smart technology in their homes when they buy it, instead of having to retrofit it in after they own their home. I've tried doing both in my house. I have an older house. It was built in 1939. And I've run probably a good quarter mile of cable, if not more, throughout the house, wiring all the speakers up and everything like that. But now there are lots of convenient things you can use, like Sonos and, you know, other Wi-Fi types of things. And really, it is still very new to the world at large. And it's really people who are a little less fearful of the technology that are really figuring out ways to make it work. But I've been lucky because, you know, I've been able to test a lot of the equipment for the manufacturers because they know, you know, what I do and the clients I have. So I am frequently a beta tester for a lot of the technology. And I have to be cognizant of all the risks of everything, because if I recommend it to a client and then it becomes a huge, you know, security breach or personal data breach, I'm culpable in that. And I would never want to be a part of anything negative happening with all of this.
Sure.
So you're clearly the converted already, right? But let's look at somebody like Jordan Perry, our listener who we heard from before we got you on the phone, who is leery of living in this now connected apartment. And really, I think what's at the base of her leeriness is expectations of privacy in the home, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I share her concerns completely. Because all of these devices can be listening devices and recording devices. What's also interesting, though, is that I would be interested if she had a Facebook account, because she's much more vulnerable from a privacy standpoint from her Facebook page and participating in that forum than she is with someone knowing when her, you know, air conditioning turns on and turns off.
God, well, when you say it like that, it sounds so rational.
Yeah.
It really does, actually.
Yeah.
And are you encountering an increased amount of skepticism? Because I do wonder if there isn't inappropriate fear-mongering, right? Like, when you put it that way, you say Facebook's more dangerous than your Nest thermostat. Are people going to start to worry about things? Like, are your clients going to say, oh, God, I don't know if I should have this, like, unbelievably convenient bedtime button?
Right.
Because it might be spying on me when you're going, dude.
Sure.
All these other things are spying on you all the time.
The thing that it comes down to from all the research I've done and the work I've done with clients is there a market out there for the data. Does anybody want to buy from Nest how frequently people's air conditioning turns on and off? Who is that data valuable to? And I really can't see anyone caring when the lights go on and off and when the air conditioner turns on and off. And most of the data, if it leaves your house, like via a smart thermostat, or you have a doorbell or lock or something like that, those messages are encrypted via IP. And that's not to say everything's safe.
Right.
But someone would have to really try hard to hack into your house to take control of things. And to what end?
You'd have to be a target, it sounds like you're saying.
Exactly.
Like, we tend to overestimate our threat matrix, our personal threat matrix. Like, unless you are a dissident or a spy or it's corporate espionage, like, no one's likely to use your smart home against you. I think the real question, though, I think, is when you're talking about big buildings or condos or, you know, our listener, Jordan.
Yep.
How do those downstream impacts, like how do people working in those buildings or living in those condos feel like they have some control over this technology and what it's collecting about them, if anything?
So, yeah, the most important thing is to be able to opt in and opt out. And I mean, I really hate when you are using a new application, you have to tick the box and automatically accept their terms and conditions before you can use something. And typically, when you read those terms and conditions in detail, they're really trying to do CYA. They're trying to cover their butts from any potential liability. They actually, in the wording, frequently don't care about your data. However, that doesn't stop them from saying, hey, this is a family that could afford a Nest thermostat. They're in this right. demographic, right. therefore. And that's where the data is valuable. They don't care about you using the system. They care about your demographic of being able to purchase it and use right. it to begin with.
Right. So how right. long until we are all living your smart home life, do you think?
I would say it'll take 25 years at least.
Wow.
And the reason I say that is because of the challenges in the design and construction industry itself. And how most people in the design industry, architects, engineers, consultants, aren't savvy about all of this. And so they don't know how to design it in and specify it. And further, there typically aren't contractors out there that are ready to go and install it. However, where this will change is where you see the big home builders. You know, these builders that'll go do a 300-home development.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there you can buy the smart home package for an extra $8,000. And everybody's like, hell yeah, give me that $8,000 system.
Sure.
And then it's sold as part of your house and it becomes part of your mortgage payment. But it really should be $1,000 investment to have a complete smart home. And there are off-the-shelf companies that make this stuff now. And it's funny because Doug and I are in the basement right now, and because we're not moving, the occupancy sensors are turning the lights off on us.
So technology's going to bite you in the fanny, doesn't it?
Exactly. And this is the thing, is that by living with it, I already understand what
right.
the challenges are.
Right.
And that's why, right. you know, we wanted to put this stuff in.
So Doug, we should say, is the guy that we hired to go do the actual in-person tape recording of David in his house. So
exactly.
that's who Doug was.
And that was, by the way, our listener, David Wiltz, in
yes.
case you were not here for the beginning of the podcast
yes.
or, you know, that's when the
yes.
that's when the coffee machine was going, and he does this for a living.
Yeah.
So it was good to get the what to freak out about. I call these the what to freak out about type interviews.
So do I have it right that you don't have a listening device in your home?
Oh, no, I do.
Oh.
I do. In
oh.
fact, I basically just consolidated down to one type of listening device. So I've had
uh-huh.
both. And just this exact week had this drama with the Google Home. So I have an Amazon Echo
yeah.
that broke. I think it got wet, maybe. So that we were down to just a Dot.
Maybe.
And the Dot has terrible sounds.
Yeah.
Sound. So I have that plugged into this little Jawbone speaker. And then I also have a Google Home, which has great sound. And that was in the living room. And it was a little speaker. But the Google Home started malfunctioning maybe 2 months ago,
yeah.
and every time I would ask it a question, it would say, sorry, something went wrong. Try again later. So I'm on the web looking up all these possible solutions. And of course, there's no like tech support for this. So yeah, no. It's just whatever Reddit turns out.
Buy a new one. That's the tech support.
Kind of. Well, and then the tech support was like, oh, something about this is related to your home address and what it thinks your home address is. And I was like, wait, what? Please. Excuse me? So then I just got mad and was like, I'm not even fixing it. And then I got too annoyed. And so I was trying to fix it 2 days ago. And the solutions are so weird, but people were like, this worked for me. Go to Google Maps, delete your home address, and then re-enter it.
No.
So I open up. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it needs to match. The entire surveillance engine needs to all be working off the same information, I guess.
Yes, right? Now I understand.
And that's the problem. Right. So I'm like, all right, I surrender. I go to Google Maps. I delete my home address. I attempt to manually re-enter it. And then I get this pop-up on my phone that says, and this is an iOS and I don't know. And it says, oh, you, in order to save a location like your home address, you have to turn back on the setting that lets us track all your searches and deliver you targeted ads across your phone. Because I turned that off. And I was like, wow. So what you're telling me is that your standalone gadget will not accept my voice commands unless I have fully opted into your entire system. And I unplugged that sucker and I went to Amazon and I ordered a new Echo.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Even if that's all a series of mistakes, it is going to come down to trust about where when you buy these devices. Like, look, at least at this point, and not for nothing, Amazon's trying to develop a big, huge ad network, and that's going to complicate their privacy argument a lot. And not for nothing, they've never said a word about privacy with Amazon, with the Echo, ever. However, at least right now, I know they're just trying to sell me stuff.
Yeah.
I can't say the same about Google, and I don't, I'm so annoyed that their giant surveillance network wants that much control that I was like, I'm not using that gadget.
Don't be evil, people. Don't be evil. We have picture. I have an Amazon Echo story, which is nowhere near as good, so I'll save it for another time. We've got pictures of David Smarthouse on our website, makemesmart.org. And also, and to the bigger point, this conversation that we're having, it's not just with me and Molly. You know, we got a Facebook group. It's super easy. Search Make Me Smart Podcast. You can post articles, discuss the show, join our community. Molly and I may swing by. I don't know. I think I joined. Did somebody join on my behalf? I don't even remember.
I joined, and sometimes I stealth like things.
Do you really?
I mean, I try. I don't want to be a downer in the Facebook group ever, or like, I'm listening. But oh my God, the conversations that are happening in the Make Me Smart podcast group are so
Not only is Google lurking and listening, so is Molly Wood.
But at least I'm straightforward about it. I'm not sharing your information with third parties.
Please re-enter your home address so that Molly Wood can lurk.
Your freaking home address. Why do you even need that? Now, I also should point out that the Amazon Echo, when I set up the new one, it also wants to know where you're located.
All right. We got to take a break. We'll be back. Bye.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
We're back. Oh, I was a little late on that. Damn. Anyway,
just like a hair.
I know. Look, timing is everything, man. Time is everything. All right, it's our turn. All right, who's going first? You once again have like 2.5. Can I just say?
No, I don't.
You do
I only
two.
Have two.
It's right. I think you're missing the point.
I'm sorry. I only have one. All that other stuff was pre-assigned to me, apparently, but I considered it background for our piece.
Boy, do I not believe you. All right. Anyway, so I'm actually, so mine's only like a half, actually, because it's a little bit of a retread from like a month ago, but it's in the news, and so I want to bring it up. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell sat down with Bloomberg today and had a lot to say about a lot of things, and obviously it's a man with a tremendous amount of influence, as we all know. And here's what he said about the U.S. budget deficit, which we learned this morning, or yesterday afternoon, actually, technically, Monday afternoon, is A, ginormous, and B, growing, and holy cow. Anyway, so McConnell, who, remember, leads a party that passed a $1.4 trillion tax cut that increases the deficit by $1.5 trillion over 10 years, right, over the debt, over 10 years. McConnell said today, and here's a quote from Bloomberg, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says the U.S. budget deficit is, quote, disturbing, and spending on entitlement programs must be addressed by both Republicans and Democrats, unquote. Here's why that's interesting. Number one, the aforementioned tax cut that the Republicans passed. Number two, oh, now he's got religion. And number three, and this is the pivotal thing, I think it's really interesting that he is now co-opting the Democrats into trying to do something about the deficit. I think it's real. This is a political moment of pivot, if you will, where McConnell now is going to try to shame the Dems into dealing with a deficit that the Republicans created in the name of entitlement reform, which, yeah, as we know, is a very touchy and interesting subject. And I just want to get that out there again. And I apologize for the retread. That's it.
I don't think it's a retread at all.
No, it kind of is. I said something about the deficit like a month ago, so.
Well, but it all is building on itself.
That's exactly
and
right.
And what it's building to is the part where Social Security and Medicare come on the line.
Yep.
I agree. And Paul, it's like you can't.
Yep. Paul Ryan was talking about it eight-ish weeks ago. I mean, it's coming. And so look for that one. Anyway, that's mine.
I have one topic with two links.
Oh, man, are you cheating? But go ahead.
Is what confuses you. I can do what I want. It's my fixation. I will do it. Ryan Singel, Stanford researcher, put out a study in which he attempted to filter out all of the bots and fake and redundant comments that were submitted through the Federal Communications Commission system during the net neutrality repeal mm-hmm. public comment period. Mm-hmm. So there were like 22 million. Rampant accusations of fraud and hacking. He made some AI, used a machine learning program to weed out any duplicates. And that includes the people who copied and pasted form letters mm-hmm. for or against. After he filtered out all those submissions, he was left with 800,000 unique comments. Out of all of those comments, 0.3% supported the repeal of net neutrality. Hmm. All of the rest were in favor of strong net neutrality regulations. He also found that many of the comments, which he said showed a nuanced understanding of policy, commenters understood the issue, came from rural areas and Republican districts where there is, frankly, not a lot of competition. Hmm. And when I posted this earlier, I got this great tweet in response. Being this flooded with false and illegitimate communications and shaped by it is so beyond ironic, wrote Thomas R. Wood, that it breaks the neck of irony and democracy with it.
Ouch. That's a good image. Breaks the neck. That's a good image.
I know, right? Yeah. It was very evocative. I went ahead and retweeted that. Anyway, it was a very interesting, discovery. And also kind of a bummer.
All right. So that's it. That's it for us now.
Hi, Kai and Molly.
This is Brent in Detroit.
This is Rebecca from Baltimore.
It was great to hear comments on my question about GDPR.
I wanted to put in my vote.
I want to discuss a slightly different but maybe related thing.
You know that guy? Okay, the slightly different but maybe related thing. He has a name. It is Matthew. He saw on Twitter that I'm going to be at the Chicago Ideas Festival later this week. And he was like, let's get a coffee. Like, can we at least say hi and have a photo op? So we're going to try to. I'm going to be on the ground for like 97 minutes, but we're going to try to make it happen.
Good deal.
Which is also just awesome. I was like, oh my God, it all comes together in the tangled web that we weave.
What's your panel?
AI, of course. Should we fear it?
Yes. Okay. So last week during our Explain-a-thon, we had a question from listeners about esports, and we asked you guys whether you thought esports, in fact, count as real sports. Kathy Yen says, and this is a quote, no, just no. Ben Newton, on the other hand, left us a voice memo. It's a little bit longer.
So Kai and Molly asked, are esports real sports? Should they be in the Olympics? Curling is in the Olympics. If curling can be in the Olympics, so can video games. I mean, come on. Curling Fortnite. Curling Fortnite. Which would you rather watch?
So, look, two things. One, when I was living in Canada, I watched a lot of curling, and I think that's actually an athletic event. Number two, did you see the Norwegian team's pants during the Olympics?
Exactly.
That's worth it alone.
Oh, my God. I am so happy that you said that because I was thinking the same thing. I was like, dude, I'm just saying that pants thing was really exciting and interesting. Curling is pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
I would take issue with that comparison.
Totally.
The one where they like ski a bunch and then shoot stuff, I would rather watch Fortnite than that.
Really?
Maybe. I don't know. That's pretty cool,
God.
Too. No.
Come on.
You're right.
Go run like
awesome.
30 miles and then try to hit a target 50 yards away. Go ahead.
With unbelievable accuracy.
Right.
10 times in a row, too.
I know.
As soon as I said that, I was like, wait,
okay.
No, that's like
all
my
right.
favorite thing.
All right. So all you biathlon fans out there, back down.
Because I'm wrong. I am extremely wrong about that. It is super cool. And so is Fortnite. Several of you wrote to us after we aired our podcast.
Get it?
Episode about the cannabis industry. Mark Dimore sees all the new business opportunities.
Molly, your podcast episode was excellent. My work history and experience is medical, pharmaceutical marketing, and branding. Today, the marijuana market is no longer tie-dyed shirts, bongs, and Jimi Hendrix posters. It is Charles Eames furniture, four-star meals, first edition books, and Teslas. We see an opportunity. Thank you, Molly and Kai. Keep up the good work.
When I was a Cub reporter at KQED in San Francisco 20 years ago, we had California had not too long before that passed the medical marijuana statute that allowed medical marijuana, which was, let's be completely frank, abused in the extreme at some of the pot shops in San Francisco. Anyway, I had to go down there and talk to a guy named Dennis Barone, who was the leader of that movement. I walked in, got a contact high. True story.
Yeah.
True story. Went back to the station. Everybody was like, whoa, dude, what? True story.
I love that only happened to you one time.
Yeah.
I feel like that's any given Tuesday.
I stayed like outside
Oakland,
and said, hey, Dennis, can you come out? Anyway, all right. We got a little fact check in here from Greg Baker, and here's what he writes. CBD is not cannabinoid. CBD is specifically cannabinoid I'm going to blow this, as he says in the middle of blowing it. Cannabinoid cannabidiol. So cannabinoids are a number, perhaps more than 100 of particular chemicals created by the cannabis plant, including THC and others. So let's be clear here. Cannabidiol. Boom.
Wow.
I know, right? Look, the name of the podcast is Make Me Smart, and we deliver.
It is. And now,
minus the contact
know, cannabidiol is a specific one that they use, and that's the one that might end up in Coca-Cola.
Yes.
Got it. Check.
Okay.
And of course, the Make Me Smart question. That question is, what is something you thought you knew, you later found out you were wrong about? Our listener is pretty close to home on this one. Let's roll the tape.
Hi, Kai. Hi, Molly. So something I thought I knew that I later found out I was wrong about. In college, I thought I wanted to be an archaeologist, and I was hooked so much that I spent all my savings and spent it to go on an archaeology dig in the Middle East. It was actually in Tel Megiddo, so super exciting and important historical place. And it was not for me, not at all for me. I did not want to be an archaeologist. After about a week there, I figured that out. But all was not lost. There was a woman on the site named Jessica Siegel who was writing an article about the dig for National Geographic. And that interested me. And so when I went back to college in the fall, I ditched the archaeology. I instead went with anthropology, which is sort of a more general category of the study of humans, which is how I got into ethnography, which is what the Library of Congress has so much of. And then I added journalism, which is, you know, in its own way, the study of humans as well. So that is the story of my little foray into archaeology.
Okay, so you know what's really funny? I didn't actually recognize who that was for about 15 seconds because she has a cold. I'm just saying.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Are you just now clicking
in? Okay, that's hysterical.
Are you just now getting it?
Yeah, that was a super slow burn on my part, speaking of podcasts.
So that was Eve Troe, the senior producer of this podcast. And she, you know, she told us a little story, but I didn't recognize who it was. And for that, Eve, I apologize. He says as he looks through the control room glass.
It's funny because that was, I thank goodness you're here. That was a...
Say that again. I'm going to make that my ringtone. Sorry.
You get one shot, guy. You get one shot, Rizal. That is hilarious. And also that my little attempt to retell her story about archaeology leading to ethnography in some way led to like a thousand corrections. People were like, ethnography is not part of archaeology. It is part of anthropology.
Oh my God.
So thank goodness she, because everybody knows, they all know everything.
Yes. Yep. So if Eve can do it, y'all can do it. The make me smart question. What's something you thought you knew, but you found out you were wrong about?
Send them to us. MakeMeSmart@Marketplace.org is our email address. And you might hear yourself on this very podcast.
and for that, we apologize. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
And it will be great.
I'm kidding.
And we'll be
I'm
like, kidding. Who is
and
that?
And we won't make fun of you at all. Oh, my God. Make Me Smart is produced by Shara Morris. Senior producer, as we said, is Eve Troeh. She is now healthy and healed and no longer sick, I hope. Tony Wagner is the digital producer. This week's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. There's no E on that, you guys. It's just T-H-O-R-P. I'm just saying. I know this is radio, but you know. Anyway, theme music is composed by Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez.
The executive director of On Demand is Sitara Nieves, and the senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. And the funniest thing about that is I could not stop myself from clicking on the document and deleting the E.
Well, here's the thing. Charlton, I'm right, right? There's no E, right? There is an E? There's no E. There's no E. All right. Phew. I mean, I've only worked with him for like 15 years. Jesus. God, you know.
I'm going to fix the Daniel part, too.
Yeah.
I just can't. Daniel I can't Ramirez. Stop copy editing right now.
Oh, my God. What are we doing? Well, now we're leaving.
Oh, dear.
Bye.
Oh, dear.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.